We shall turn now to the Word of God, to the book of Job and the chapter 31, where we have Job continuing to speak, still answering the allegations and refuting the accusations that are made by his supposed friends and comforters against him. And when we come to the end of the chapter 31, verse 40, the concluding words are, "The words of Job are ended." And it's as though Job is now satisfied. He has said everything that is necessary, and he has said it in the light of a thorough self-examination. This is one of the exercises that is absolutely essential in the life and experience of every child of God. We may do many things, we may be involved in many religious activities, but if we fail to spend time in self-examination, we can be certain we are not going to make spiritual progress. And this is what Job has been engaged in. And this is one of the things that affliction brings to the attention of a child of God. Just like Job, maybe not so desperately, and no doubt not under the intensive kind of affliction that he was under, but nevertheless, the honest, true child of God will always be concerned to know, well, what is God doing, and what am I to understand is his purpose in these providences? And you'll see that here in this chapter, verse 35, Job is still crying out after God, "Oh, that one would hear me. Behold, my desire is that the Almighty would answer me." Now, Job isn't in any way determining or trying to determine how God would answer him or how he should answer him. But he is certain, if God would only answer me, then I would be content. If God would answer me yea or nay, if he would either accuse me or vindicate me, I would be satisfied, for I would know what God's mind is. And this is the desire, and it is a most intense desire on the part of Job. And here, because of that desire, he examines himself in the previous chapters. He's from chapter 29, he's been doing this. In chapter 29, it seems Job reviews all his public life, and he reviews his relationship with the princes and the legislators and with the men of society. Then in the chapter 20, as we noted, he compares his past, or contrasts it with his present. How changed the situation has become. How very differently God is dealing with him now. But then when we come to chapter 31, Job continues. He doesn't just accept, well, things have changed. I just acquiesce. I just humbly bow to the sovereignty of God. Job now begins in chapter 31, further self-examination, but examining his personal, private life. He's examined his public life in chapter 29. Now, in chapter 31, he's examining his private life before God. Now, that is a vitally important exercise. And maybe if we stopped for a moment and we thought, when did I last do that? When did I last sit down before God and review my whole private life before God, the life that only God and I know about, my life as seen by Him, not as seen by men, but my life as it appears before the eye of God? This is the great concern for Job in this chapter. And you will see that he goes into detail and he considers his heart condition. You see the references that he makes to his heart, verse 7, if my step hath turned out of the way, and mine heart walked after mine eyes. That's his concern. What's the condition of my heart? What are my affections? Where are they focused upon? Again in verse 9, if mine heart have been deceived by a woman, my heart, have I been deceived? Has my heart taken me astray? Has mine heart followed mine eyes? Has my heart gone out of the way? And you will see again in the verse 27, he asks, and my heart, if my heart, verse 26 to get the connection, if I beheld the sun when it shined, or the moon walking in brightness, and my heart hath been secretly enticed, or my mouth hath kissed my hand. Now what Job is talking about, he lived in the days when many around him were idolaters. They worshipped the sun and they adored the moon. This is the concern of Job, as my heart even secretly wandered away from God, that I have given place to some idol and that I have not given God his place. He says, verse 28, this also were an iniquity to be punished by the judge, for I should have denied the God that is above. And he's examining himself. My heart, has it been consistently following God, or has it wandered? Has my heart been enticed? Has it been tempted away from God? That's what he's concerned about. Man looketh on the outward appearance, but God looketh on the heart. And Job is here examining his heart before God. But then you will see also in this chapter that he examines his very thoughts. He's not content with just his heart. He goes into his thoughts. We are so familiar with thoughts passing in multitudes through our mind that we don't even think of our thoughts. We don't think that we're even thinking. And here is Job saying at the very beginning of this chapter, I made a covenant with mine eyes. Why then should I think upon a maid? He is concerned that his thoughts have been honest and upright thoughts. He does not want thoughts that would grieve God and so on. And you will see again, he's examining his words and what he has been saying, his words before God, even his words regarding his enemies. He's really thoroughly examining himself before God, and even his looks. He is saying, I made a covenant with mine eyes. I wanted mine eyes to be disciplined. I wanted mine eyes to be under control. I wanted mine eyes to be the servants of God for my soul's good. I made a covenant. What it really means, I cut a covenant in the Old Testament. That was the way of men generally entering into a covenant. A beast would be slain, and it would be, they would call it the cutting of a covenant, and the parties that were to engage in the covenant would indeed engage with one another, that if they violated the terms of the covenant, then such a curse would come upon them. And this is how sincere, how serious Job is. There are things Job didn't want to look at. There were things that Job knew would not be beneficial to his soul, that would be distracting, but that they would be corrupting. And so often, even the Lord's own people are not careful in regard to these things. And Job is here concerned about his words, but also his very thoughts and his looks, as well as his deeds. And you can see he mentions various deeds of various kinds, but Job wants to be before God a righteous man. He wants his life to be pleasing to God. And that brings us to the consciousness that Job obviously has. Certain things as they are set before us in this chapter. As he examines himself, he's doing it, first of all, with a God consciousness. He's conscious of God, whom he's desiring here would speak to him. Now, it's all very well to attend the worship of God, to read our Bibles, to go through the religious motions, and we can do that all and not have any God consciousness whatever. We could pray or endeavor to pray and not even have God consciousness, be talking into the air. When we stop and think, who is God? What is God? And what am I before God? And if God be God, what should my attitude be toward him? If he is everything he says he is throughout the Bible, how should I approach him? How should I address him? How should I think of him? When we look at the very terminology of Scripture regarding God, I used to hear old men in the past when they would pray. Very often it was a manner of addressing God, the Almighty. They would address God as the Almighty. And it was a recognition that there was none greater. They were actually addressing him who was absolutely sovereignly supreme in everything. And this is how Job is examining himself, knowing that he's got to be absolutely honest, that he cannot hide anything from God. What does he say? Verse 4. Doth not he see my ways and count all my steps? Now, if you and I just stop for a moment, how many of our steps did we count? We never even thought of counting them. We didn't think it was very important. And yet, here's Job saying, I can't take one step, but God records it. God records every step. Is it a step in the right direction? Is it a step out of the path of duty? Is it a step in backsliding? Is it a step forward? Or is it a step backwards? Job is examining himself with a consciousness. God knows absolutely everything. And I can hide nothing from him. He sees my ways. He sees everything about me. He sees everything I'm doing, everything I'm being, everything I'm involved in, and he counts all my steps. Then Job, in verse 6, let me be weighed, he says, in an even balance, that God may know mine integrity. What's Job saying here? It's his desire that God would justify him and vindicate him, and therefore he lives a life of integrity, not before men, but before God. That's his concern. And you will see in verse 33, he says, if I covered my transgressions as Adam by hiding mine iniquity in my bosom, what's he saying? If I have tried like Adam to run away from God, to hide from God because my conscience is telling me I have sinned, I have grieved God, I have offended God, then God knows that. God is asking ever, where art thou, Job? And he says, here, if I've hidden mine iniquity in my bosom, thinking I've kept it secret, it hasn't been hidden from God. And this is how Job is examining himself. He's got to be absolutely honest, because he knows, he's conscious, God is omniscient. He knows absolutely everything, and therefore I cannot deceive him. The only one I will deceive or try to deceive is myself. But then Job is also self-conscious. Not only is he God-conscious, he is self-conscious. And he is conscious of his sin. Verse 33, if I covered my transgressions. Job, when God introduces us to Job, he is a man who is upright in the eyes of God, a man of integrity, the greatest man in the East, but he's one who fears God. And here's Job saying, if I covered my transgressions, I wouldn't dare to hide them or try to cover them up. I have taken them to God. I haven't hidden them. I haven't tried to excuse them. I have instead gone in the opposite direction of Adam. He sought to run away from God when he sinned. When I am aware that I've sinned, I run to God. I go seeking forgiveness. And Job is not trying to pretend that he's free of guilt or free of sin or that he is not guilty of transgressions. And you see, because he knows himself to some degree, he's self-conscious, then he is aware of how easily he can be tempted. He's aware of the temptations that he must resist, and you see how he refers to them. But he's also sin conscious, not only in the sense in which we've already mentioned, but he is conscious of how he can be tempted into sin, and he refers to certain temptations, certain actions as being sinful. You'll see what he, verse 11, he says, this is an heinous crime. Yea, it is an iniquity to be punished by the judges. It is an iniquity. What's he talking about? Unfaithfulness or an idolatrous desire or an adulterous desire. He's speaking of this lack of integrity. If he were to be responsible for it, it would be a crime. He doesn't minimize it. And he is conscious then of the reality of sin around him and how he can be tempted. His very eyes may draw his heart away. Verse 7, if my step hath turned out of the way, and mine heart walked after mine eyes. My heart walked after mine eyes. How many a man, how many a woman, how many a young person has gotten themselves into big, big trouble because the heart followed the eyes. And this is, you see, what Job is conscious of. I have within me, in my very nature, the very things that would corrupt my whole life, would destroy not only my life, but that of others. And you will see again in verse 28, he says, this also were an iniquity to be punished by the judge, for I should have denied or lied before God that is above. I would have been responsible for sin, not only against God, but before God. And you see right throughout this chapter, he is very conscious of how easily he could sin and the temptations that would allure him into sin. But he's also, I believe, world conscious, and I say that in the sense that he's aware of what's going on around him. And not only is he desiring to live a holy, godly life before God, but also before men. He's conscious that they see him, and he is conscious that every relationship he's involved in with them says something about him. And then, and so you see that he focuses upon certain relationships that in reality cover the whole of his life. And therefore the chapter divides up into those particular relationships or his examining of them. And the very first, you will see in the first part of the chapter, from verse 1 down to verse 12, is his examination before God of his domestic life. He examines his domestic life. How is his relationship within the domestic circle? He says in verse 9, if mine heart have deceived me by a woman, or if I have laid wait at my neighbor's door, then let my wife grind unto another, and so on. If I have not been faithful, I would expect God to punish me. If I have not been true, I would expect God to deal with me. That's in reality what Job was saying. And because he knew his own heart, he didn't pretend that he had reached a state of sinless perfection. That's why he says, I made a covenant with mine eyes. I did not want my heart to wander after my eyes and my eyes to be going in the wrong direction. So I made a covenant with mine eyes so that even if my heart follows my eyes are taking me to God. They're taking me to his word. Mine eyes are taking my heart in the right direction. And if we were to just look back on this one day, we might well ask, how many times did our hearts follow our eyes? And maybe our hearts weren't going in the right direction at all. But Job is here examining his relationship within the domestic circle. In verse 5 he says, if I have walked with vanity, or if my foot have hasted to deceit. And in the context, he's considering, have I ever been deceitful? Deceitful toward my wife. Deceitful toward my family. You remember at the very beginning of the book of Job, how concerned he was about his children. He would offer up sacrifices because he was aware they may have sinned in their hearts. They may have forgotten God, and he was concerned that his family would be right with God, that there would be constantly he would be offering up sacrifices. Because he knew not only was he a sinner, they were sinners, and God was a holy God, and that was a concern to him. But then you will see that in the second part of the chapter, Job examines his business life. Verse 13. If I did despise the cause of my manservant or of my maidservant when they contended with me, when my manservant and maidservants, when they had an issue with me and they approached me, he said, when they did, I was God conscious. And verse 14, what then shall I do when God riseth up, and when he visiteth, what shall I answer him? And he considered the relationship between himself and those who worked for him and served him. He is conscious, I'm dealing with them as their superior. But I have to deal with God who is my superior. And I cannot treat them any other way than I would expect God to deal with me. And he goes on to say, verse 15, did not he that made me in the womb make him? He made both superiors and inferiors alike. And he says, I was made in the womb, and my servant and my maidservant and my manservant, they were made in the womb just like me. God, he says, did not fashion us in the womb. You'll see he speaks about making and fashioning both. He didn't just make. He fashioned. He had a design for every single one. And Job knew this. God had, he made me and he fashioned me according to his own sovereign design. He fashioned my maidservant and he fashioned my manservant in the womb differently to me. He had a plan for him and he had a plan for me. And who am I then to imagine I'm better or I'm more important? God fashioned him and he fashioned me for a purpose. And Job is therefore, because of this God consciousness and because of his self-consciousness, I came out of the womb just like my servant. And God formed me in the womb and he designed me in the womb, but he also designed my servant. And we both came forth made by God, bearing something of the image of God. We weren't made in a different way. And this is something we should ever be mindful of. Job had obviously great ability, became the greatest man in the East. He didn't just become that without ability. He obviously was a man of great gifts and great ability. And his servants did not have those gifts or abilities that he had. But Job doesn't say, well, you're inferior to me because God made you inferior. That's not what Job is saying. I deal with God and God deals with me. And how shall I answer him if I mistreat those who serve me? And Job is examining the very way in which he conducts his business, how he relates to those who are employed in his service. You see, Job is conscious. God is seeing absolutely everything. I can't hide anything, any part of my life, any of my dealings with men. But then you will see that Job then examines his social life. In verse 16, he says, if I have withheld, it's interesting to see how many times Job uses that little expression. If I have, 16 times he uses it in this one chapter. If I have, if I have, if I have, did I do this? Should I not have done it? Did I do this correctly? Did I do this properly before God? Verse 5, if I have walked with vanity, if I have walked in pride and haughtiness, just as an empty sham in falsehood, if, verse 7, if my step hath turned out of the way, verse 9, if mine heart hath been deceived by a woman, verse 13, if I despise the cause of my manservant. And you can go right through the chapter, see these expressions that he's at. Did I ever do that? Did I ever be responsible for that? Was I ever guilty of falsehood or deceit? If I have done it, or if I have failed to do it, I am accountable to God. You see, he was conscious of the reality of sins of omission as well as sins of commission. And he examined all his life. Did I do what I should have done? Or have I failed to do what I ought to have done before God? And he examines here himself, verse 16, if I have withheld the poor from their desire, or have caused the eyes of the widow to feel, and he begins to examine. How did I treat the widows? How did I treat the needy? How did I use my goods to help the poor? And so on. Verse 19. If I have seen any perish for want of clothing, or any poor without covering, did I ever do that? He's asking himself very serious questions. Did I ever do that? Now, he couldn't do that without reviewing, going back over the years of his prosperity and asking, is there a time when I failed in my duty? Was there a time when I was of a wrong spirit? Was there a time when I was selfish? Was there a time, as Job says here, verse 21, if I have lifted up my hand against the fatherless, and so on. Verse 24, if I have made gold my hope. He looks back and everything. Did I ever do the thing that I shouldn't have done? He says, I do not want to cover up my transgressions. And if I have transgressed, then I want to go to God and confess it and acknowledge it. We can very, very easily dismiss and very quickly forget our sins as though they never happened, as though they were never committed. Job is here going through his life, every relationship in a domestic circle, in the place of employment, amongst the poor, amongst the needy, in society around him. And then Job examines his religious life as well. He's not missing out anything. As we've already noted, he says in verse 24, if I have made gold my hope, or have said to the fine gold, thou art my confidence. If I have digressed, and instead of putting my confidence in God, I have to acknowledge I became secure, putting my confidence in material things, instead of God. He says, if verse 25, if I rejoiced because my wealth was great and because mine hand had gotten much, if I was putting my confidence in my prosperity, my good management, how I've managed my herds, how I've managed my business, how I've managed my servants, and so on, and I deserve then the increase. I deserve the prosperity. Job says, if I have ever done that, I will answer to God. And then he says, if I beheld the sun when it shined, or the moon walking in brightness, and my heart hath been secretly enticed, or my mouth hath kissed my hand. It says, it was a way of acknowledging an idol or a false god, that they would kiss their hand as a sign of respect for the idol. And Job is saying, if I have done that even secretly, no one knows about it. No one suspects I've done it. No one would even imagine that it would enter my heart. But he said, that doesn't matter. I am concerned about how I stand before God. And he examines his relationship with God. How often we just simply take our relationship with God for granted. It surely must be as it has always been. It must be normal. How are we tonight in our personal relationship with God? Has it improved since yesterday? Has it improved since last week? Has it improved since last year? That's what Job's concern is. Has there ever been any backsliding? Any secret departing from God? These are the things that concern Job. And then you will see how really deeply he goes as you come to the end of the chapter, when he begins to examine his stewardship before God. And he, just for the sake of time, in verse 38, he says, if my land cry against me. You would think, now, Job, you're getting too extreme. Job, you're just going too far. My land, he says, the land that God has given me, the land that I have inherited, the land that I live off, if my land cry against me, modern men would be saying, Job, you're a way, way out, Job. He says, if my land cry against me, or that the furrows, likewise thereof complain. Job believed that the land that God had given him could complain against him because of abuse or misuse. Where do men today who till the land even think of such a thing? I remember growing up as a boy, it was the same in every farm, not only ours, but the neighbors. There was always one field around, and it was known as the lay field. When my father would send me off to do something, and he said, it's in the lay field. I knew what field that was. That was the field that lay uncultivated for a year, so that it would recover. That was how people lived. That was how they believed they ought to carefully manage the land that belonged to God, not to them. And Job is saying, the land that God gave me, I think of it as his. I cultivate it for him. I use it for him. And he says, if I have eaten the fruits thereof without money, or have caused the owners thereof to lose their life, then let thistles grow instead of wheat, and so on. If I have not treated even my laborers on the land with faithfulness and integrity, then let me suffer for it. You can see in this chapter that Job is concerned to have a holy life before God. A holy life. There wasn't any step he would take, any direction he would turn, anything he would do. But he would be concerned, is it pleasing to God? When we mightn't have the lands that Job had. When we go out to dig in the garden even, or cultivate the orchard or whatever, does it occur to us, I must do what I'm doing to please God, and I must do what I'm doing to glorify him? Or do we just do it? I can do it any way I like, any time I want. You see, it was this God consciousness that governed everything that Job thought, that governed everything he did. Everything. Now, how many of us honestly before God live like that? And Job is concerned. God, he wants God to answer him. And if God finds fault with me, then I will acknowledge my sin and confess it. He will either find me guilty or he will vindicate me. But it's entirely satisfying to know that what God does is right. Now here we have an example. You've heard of the patience of Job. Here's the man whose patience our attention is drawn to. A man who took God into everything, absolutely everything. That's how it ought to be if we claim to be the people of God. But we shall leave it there. May the Lord bless his word to us.